Welcome to Main Street Banking, a podcast for community bankers brought to you by the Barrett School of Banking, located in the heart of banking, blues, and barbecue, Memphis, Tennessee. My name is Byron Earnhardt. I am the program director here at Barrett, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to our corner of the banking world and hope that we can make your bank, your staff, and maybe even your day a better one. Okay, we are starting 2020 off with a favorite topic of ours, bank training. We've got our executive director, my boss, good friend, Chris Kelly, here, who's put together some really information, really good information on bank training. Not just talking about Barrett, but definitely how training can be used by the banks to improve themselves, improve their employees' lives, improve their careers. It's a really interesting topic and one that we believe very highly in here at the school. So I wanted to get him on and talk about that as we start the 2020 year. So Chris, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Thank you for having me. Even though I just walked, you know, from my office to here, so it was, you know, about a 10-foot walk, but glad that you could work me in.
Yes, and definitely appreciate you working it in here into your busy schedule. I didn't know if I should holler anymore across the hall to next door. But Chris, tell me about yourself real quick and introduce yourself to our listening audience.
Well, for those of y'all that that don't know me, I'm the executive director of the banking school. I've been here for 16 years now. I was a banker prior to that, worked at National Bank of Commerce here in Memphis for about 9 years, was on the branch administration side, so was a regional manager for us. When I left to come to the banking school, I had about 40 branches that I was responsible for, so the hiring, the training, the coaching, the engagement with employees, that kind of all fell to me and some of my partners there at the branch administration level. And so that's always been something that I care deeply about, to make sure that we're hiring the right people, we get them on board as quickly as possible, we get them understanding our culture. When needed, we, you know, kind of reboard or retrain any annual continuing ed that they need, and then kind of the upboarding things some of the things that we've talked about where it's time for them to be promoted. So some of the additional training, leadership things that we can do for them to get them ready for that promotion. So it's always been something that I've cared deeply about, and some of the things that we're trying to intertwine with all the different banking education that we have. So that's kind of me in a nutshell, and what we're hoping to get across, at least on this podcast.
Yeah. You mentioned three phrases there that I know we use a lot here in the office, which means nobody probably understands what we're talking about if we're telling all insides jokes. But you know, we mentioned reboarding, onboarding, and upboarding. What does all that mean? And for a community bank, how do they implement that? What does it mean to that small rural community bank to have those three different types of training?
Okay. Well, let's go one step before all that happens. One, you know, if we have an opening, you know, we want to hire the right person. So just basics by hiring the right person, you know, if are we using any job analysis or specifications or requirements that job will entail? Recruiting, how are we doing the recruiting? Is it internal? Are we using social media? How are we trying to find that person? And then the selection process to make sure that we're getting the right person for the right job. Is it just resume only? We're using a personality test to make sure that fits the job that we have there. Ability tests, some of those things if they're going to be a teller, can they lift a certain amount of weight? Just things like that. And then behavioral interviewing, and then making sure that we're consistent across the board when we're interviewing people so that we can hire the right person. And then once we do that, then we'll go into the kind of three things we talked about, which is the onboarding, reboarding, and upboarding. Mm-hmm. And so so kind of the onboarding piece is making sure that once we have that right person hired, how do we get them engaged in our culture? They are comfortable coming in the door, knowing what to expect. And actually, a little bit of that is pre-boarding. What are we doing right before they walk in the door? You know, if the bank has a policy where you can wear a logoed shirt, well, do we go ahead and buy them a couple so they're ready to go day one? You know, if you're hiring, you know, Gen Z or millennials, you know, have we maybe sent a video or something to them from the CEO or the president or the division head just to welcome them to the team? So some of those things to really get them in tune with what's happening. And once we get them on board, okay, is it day one? Everything's ready. You know, I know how frustrating it can be when you start a new job and you don't have an email address. You don't have some of those simple things already lined up. So have we already talked to IT and gotten what they need for the person to have an email address? Have we already ordered them business cards? Things like that, that they're ready to hit the ground running, especially if they're going to be in a sales position and they're going to be talking to people. So do we have those things, those basics in place where they can hit day one and ready to work for us? You know, those are some of the things that I think that we need to think about. Once they're in place, you know, and there's going to be some initial training they've got to get with HR, they've got to get their insurance, all those kinds of things in place. But then do we have a formal way to kind of get them up to speed, whether it's, you know, week one, month one, 6 months in? Do we have that that formal process in place? And then are you, once they walk in the door, have something formal in place where they're getting to meet different people? Mm-hmm. Anybody that would be a point of contact for them in the position they're in, whether it's back office, front line, whatever it may be, so they can put a face with a name? Do you have them, their little Rolodex of names and contacts within the bank that they can call to when they have that moment of need, and that it's laid out directly? Because you can't assume that they've met them once and they know exactly what that person is for. So laying out something for them that makes it easy for them, comfortable for them to have that conversation, go to someone that can help them, especially if they're going to be in a service position. But having that formal process in place, so when they walk in the door, they're ready, they're comfortable, we've set them up, and then they know, and especially when you look at all the studies for Gen Z and millennials, they want kind of a formal process to know, you know, how much contact they're going to have with the person, the mentor, the person that's going to train them, and when that's going to happen. Because the way to lose somebody pretty quickly is if you're not following up on those promises that week one, you know, month one, 90 days in, here's the training you're going to get, here's who's going to be doing that training, here's going to be kind of your mentor of sorts. Those are things that we have to formally set in place so people can know the expectations when they're coming in.
And I think that goes to, I know when I changed jobs and went to work at a bank, when we went through that sort of training, you know, yes, go over the loan policy, you know, go over some of the issues in that particular branch and kind of get the marching orders for that. One of the things that helped me with it was just knowing the culture, knowing the individuals in the back office and in the ops department or in the loan documentation. You know, if I know that individual was a Mississippi State fan, you know, we kind of got hit it off on the right foot there. I mean, just the basic culture, the personalities that are involved is huge. Just even taking them around and telling the new hire what they do, talk to them a little bit. It'll take 15 minutes and made a huge difference. Talk about in my production, hit the ground running day one, already having a contact in the back office to help me out. That was big.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that if we spend so much time and effort hiring the right person, yet once they start, we're not giving them our full attention to make sure they're fully up to speed. You could lose somebody immediately, meaning they could feel, okay, this job is not for me. I feel like I'm not being listened to. This is not the culture that they sold me in the interview.
Right.
And so, I've got a couple of stats here. And this is from Kronos and the Human Capital Institute, and it's a study that they did. And it was 37% of organizations spend less than a week onboarding new hires. Mm. And 25% spend less than a month. And it's eye-opening to me that, again, especially if you're hiring for a position that's going to be kind of in a management training process or something like that, where you're spending, you know, less than 37%, spending less than a week onboarding this new employee, and less than 25% less than 1 month. I just don't understand that. Where you know, we got this new person we really like, we want them to do well, we want them to understand our culture, but we've forgotten about them after the first week or the first month, and then they're there to kind of paddle around in the water by themselves and try to survive. And we don't have a formal process to keep that training, those formal check-ins, past that 1 month. Mm-hmm. And that's what's kind of nutty. And then in this study as well, 10% of these companies interviewed, 10% view onboarding as an ongoing activity. So 90% of the people in these companies that were surveyed, 90% don't see onboarding as an ongoing activity. And that's scary to me, because, I mean, if we want to maintain our culture, we want people to work for us, and yet we're not spending the time on these folks that are coming in, and especially not viewing onboarding as an ongoing activity. That's it's kind of eye opening.
Well, and in the as a means to go a little further with the ongoing part of that, you know, we talk about reboarding, continuing once they've kind of moved past the new hire stage, continuing that training and that education. I know we've talked about in some of the video stuff that we've done or some of the blog posts that I've written that ongoing education being a part of your strategic plan, in that it arms your people with the tools that they need to, you know, beat the competition. But what? How can that small community bank continue that ongoing, not just onboarding, but what we call reboarding, continuing that process?
Well, I mean, most people want to be constant learners.
Yeah.
And a survey that LinkedIn did, and Trish Springfield, one of our facilitators, kind of showed me this information. But 74% of employees want to learn during their spare time at work. Mm. And I'm not saying that we all have a ton of spare time at work, but 74% of the people in this LinkedIn survey said that they would love to be able to continue learning. They'd love to have an opportunity for that. And so this reboarding, making sure that we either have continuing ed or ways that we can continually engage our employees, it could be giving them the opportunity to listen to our podcasts. Those are free. You could create a book club within your bank where you're buying only a couple books, but you spread them around to different people. And so therefore you have that opportunity, whether it's management or leadership books or things like that. Having an opportunity for some webinars and things that we may have, or ICBA or your state association may have, that you buy once and that multiple people in the bank can take advantage of. But making that time available for your folks for continuing education to make them feel that you care about them, that'll help with their loyalty toward the bank. And that's the biggest thing that I think that we forget about, is that once we've hired them and we've initially trained them, then we leave them alone. Mm. And then how can we continually engage them and show them that we value what they do? And some of that could be just in a little bit of downtime or lunch breaks or things like that, giving them some opportunities to continue to learn. And it doesn't necessarily have to be job specific. Like listening to our podcast, it could be industry specific. It could be a leadership book or some YouTube videos.
Professional skills things,
and some of those things that we've got recorded, or again, some of the other associations, whether it's on the national or state level, that you could find that are inexpensive and that the bank can reuse, and so your price point really is not that much. You know, in breakdown, because I know a lot of people talk about, well, the generational aspects of who we're hiring and their different thoughts on things. In this same LinkedIn survey, 43% of Gen Z, so your youngest available employees that you could hire, 42% of millennials, and 33% of Gen Xers want fully self-directed or independent learning. So again, it's putting some of those things in place, whether it's webinars or that book club or professional skills, YouTube videos, having a library of these kinds of things at work that people on their own time can learn and keep them engaged. And so those are, I mean, it's kind of eye-opening that you've got folks that really, really want to learn. How are we giving them that opportunity to reboard, to stay engaged, to get that continuing ed they need that really doesn't cost that much money if we think about it?
Yeah, and I was thinking as you were talking, reminded of Lindsay Lenore's podcast last year, where we talked a lot about, maybe 2 years ago, one of the first ones we did, but she was talking about the idea that the thing that she had seen in some banks, you know, a lot of banks in their brick and mortar have a lot of dead space. And one of the banks that she had seen allowed, I think, some of the kids of some of the student of the employees to come in and paint murals and go kind of crazy and create a learning space, create a learning and library, so to speak, for the bank in space that was dead. And I mean, non-earning square footage is a pretty good way to leverage that for your employees.
Having said that, if you had a space like that, and one final thing from this LinkedIn survey said 94% of employees say they would stay at a company longer if it invested in their learning and development. And it's 94%. So if you had that space, if you had that learning library, if you had those opportunities where people could self-direct some of their learning and have that space in one of your locations, that could happen. And you give them a little bit of time. You know, if it's only a few times a week, you know when your down times are. You know when traffic is not high. But 94% of employees say they would stay at a company longer if it invested in their learning and development. How can you not listen to that and believe, you know, that you should make some changes when it comes to your continuing ed for your folks?
And think about the ROI on that when you're looking at what it would actually cost to get, we're talking about a library, but kind of just build up some training, book club, get and that, you know, that be the cost, but the reward is, you know, increasing employee retention by 50%.
Yeah.
That's in investment class, we call that good.
You know? Well, you know, and we talk about engagement, and especially in this reboarding where you're wanting people to still feel engaged in the company. But, you know, do you want people to quit and stay, or quit and leave? And so we really need to make sure that we are constantly working on engaging the employees that we have, because it is so much less expensive to keep what we have, keep them engaged, keep them trained, than that person leave, or they quit and stay, and we just don't, you know, they're not doing great work, or they quit and we kind of force them out the door. But taking the time and the money and the effort to have to go out and hire new people because we didn't do our job keeping them trained, keeping them engaged, when we could have done so fairly easily. And that's a big thing, is that sometimes turnover might be good because it's completely performance-based and we've done everything that we can do for certain people. But a lot of times it's our own fault, and we need to be aware of that and be confident enough when we look in the mirror to say, yep, we've not done it right in the past, but we can easily change it going forward.
Yeah.
And so taking that time for those employees and giving them the space and the opportunity to get the training they need, to feel confident in what they're doing, and that we can offer that. And again, we can be creative and it not cost us a lot of money.
Well, and I like to kind of carry on to that idea. I like what we've seen a lot of in banks and sponsors that send us bankers, and really to kind of, it's almost like a subset of reboarding. We call it upboarding, in that, you know, positioning. They've got an individual that, you know, they really want to see promoted, and this individual wants to be promoted. And you're talking about a third of our generation, the old Gen Xers. A third of us cynical Gen Xers out there are wanting self-directed training. You take that individual and that they have a little ambition and a little drive and take advantage of that, now you're getting into upboarding and training up. Talk a little bit about, you know, how banks, especially from your past as a branch administrator in a big region, how do you handle employees like that? How do you handle their education?
Well, I mean, when you're talking about upboarding, it's those folks that have been engaged, continue to be engaged, and are perfect for a promotion. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one, do we have the training in place to help them when it comes to that promotion? I will throw out that, you know, a program like our Graduate School of Banking, that would be the perfect opportunity for those that are soon to be or recently promoted, that will give them that overall breadth of knowledge in every aspect of banking that that can get them ready for that. But there's so many leadership development type programs. ICBA Lead Forward is one that Byron and I are lucky enough to go to each year. Lindsay Lenore and her group at the ICBA Education folks do a great job on. But finding those things to create leaders. They've been great at the job that they've been doing, but now we want them to run a division, run a branch. And so how do we get them upboarded? How do we get them prepared for taking on the extra responsibility of coaching and counseling a staff, working with people closely? And so, you know, those are the things that we, you know, that we have to think about. But I mean, our Graduate School of Banking is one of the best, I think, best bang for your buck when it comes to that, and getting someone prepped for that next position.
I think too, speaking of the Lead Forward, what really kind of got me chewing on the whole upboarding idea, particularly in terms of identifying individuals, was and Lead Forward, Prez Kennedy, and talking about the Bank of Zachary, the intentional succession planning that
he and Mark Marion, who Mark took his spot. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was, when you were talking, I was like, Mark. Yeah. Prez and Mark's intentionality of sitting down, both sides having buy-in on the process, creating essentially a to-do list of things that both sides needed to do and being intentional about that really spoke to the concept of upboarding as a different part of it, a different boarding than reboarding.
Yeah.
And thinking about how banks approach all three of these areas differently, but under the same umbrella of advancing the bank and promoting their culture.
Well, and upboarding, you know, part of that is, you know, succession planning. Now, again, a lot of times you think succession planning is only, okay, who's going to take the CEO spot when he retires or,
right,
or she retires. But really looking at all your different divisions and how in-depth you're looking at who is the next person, you know, if someone should get ill, if someone needs to take a leave of absence, if someone, you know, God forbid, health-wise, is no longer with us. In every single line of business, do you have that person ready to step up? And this one thing that HR Professionals magazine put out, and this Brad Fetterman, one of our facilitators, pointed it out to me, but 21% of companies have sufficient succession plans for key positions. 21%, only 21% have this figured out. So why is it that 79% of us aren't thinking of this? Is it just because we don't have the people ready? We're afraid to go to someone who's not quite ready, but, you know, if we tell them, hey, you know, you're our next in line, are we afraid that they're not going to work hard anymore? You know, or do we, you know, what are we thinking there? And that's the biggest thing that, you know, we need to think of our mission critical positions, and it's not just a CEO, but, you know, whether it's compliance or IT, you know, the CFO. But really look at all those positions, and do we have people lined up and ready? And do we have the things in place, or those partners, whether it's with Barrett School of Banking, whether it's with ICBA, whether it's with your state bank association, do we have those partners ready and in place and knowing the training that they offer, so we're ready to push that person into that new position, give them everything they possibly can get so they can be successful in that new position, that they can be a great leader. And so, you know, those are the things that we need to talk about. And you know, and another thing that Byron and I have talked a good bit about is once you invest in their development, kind of what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this 70-20-10 developmental model that we've talked about, and it's been around for a long, long time. But definitely 70% of the job, you're going to learn on the job. So 70% of it, you know, if you're talking about a 40-hour work week, but 70% of that time is really you doing the job. That's how you're going to learn it, the ins and outs, what works, what doesn't work. 20% should focus on building developmental relationships, whether that's through mentors, colleagues, peers, so you have somebody to lean on, somebody to ask questions to, and whether it's inside the bank or outside the bank. And I like this one thing that this Vin Yang spoke at an ICBA event, and he said, you're the direct reflection of the top five people you spend time with. Well, again, you're the direct reflection of the top five people you spend time with. So when it comes to that 20% of time focused on building developmental relationships through mentors, colleagues, or peers, who are your top five? Do you help these folks that are moving up to a leadership role? Do you help them find their top five? How will they find that top five? So really trying to make sure that you're giving them those key relationships. And so then that final 10% should focus on training resources. And again, that goes back to courses and seminars and online education and podcasts and books. And then, you know, do we have that learning library and resources available to our people? And so those are the things that we, when it comes to prepping somebody for that next leadership role, you know, do we give them the right people to work with, mentors and such? And then do we have that training available or those partners available to push people to make sure that they're going to be successful? Because ultimately, if they're successful, the bank is successful, and then we've all done our job.
Well, you think, you know, at first blush, that 10% training, it doesn't sound like a whole lot, but when you boil it down, 40-hour work week, you're talking 4 hours a week. Let's say Fridays are crazy and you don't have a whole lot of time. Or, you know, I know some bankers like to go check collateral on Friday and slip out a little early. So Monday through Thursday, an hour a day, that's serious commitment. And that's not just a 10% blow-off. Yeah. An hour a day is that's a commitment to education, to training.
And it could be. I mean, it could be part of that is that on your own time you're listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
Your own time you're finishing up reading that leadership book or something like that. But definitely giving a few hours a week for folks to do some training to get some things in place that will make them better at what they do. And so when you look at it that way, it's the least that we could do if we want to have a successful operation is to provide the right resources and some time to give people the best chance of success.
That's a heck of a spot to drop the mic right there, Chris. Give us a quick heads up on what we've got coming up in terms of programming here at Barrett.
Well, in the next couple of months, we have our week-long Commercial Lending Academy that comes up at the end of February, kind of your 40-hour boot camp for those newer to commercial lending. And then right after that in March, we have Understanding Bank Profitability, so it's kind of a deep dive for a day and a half into all the ratios that all of us banks live on, and kind of then understanding some of the products and services that we can implement to improve our profitability. And then, of course, later down the line in May is the Graduate School of Banking, and so we have a few spots remaining in that. We will sell out again, and so I expect us to have bankers from 27 or 28 states this year. And our first year class, I think within the next 30 to 45 days, will sell out. So if any of you are listening and you got some people in mind for the banking school, do not hesitate to get that registration in soon. And just give me or Byron a shout, and we can kind of talk you through that if you got questions. But other than that, that kind of gives you a little what's going to happen kind of as we finish winter time and head into the spring.
And if you are coming to as a first year student, or you thinking about it, you'll check the Facebook and LinkedIn pages. I'm doing an orientation video series. You can have the link right there to register. But you kind of want to know what you need to know coming to grad school. We'll be doing that this whole week, so check that out. Chris, I appreciate it, man. I hope you have a safe trip back next door to your office.
I hope I can make it those 10 feet.
I hope so. All right. Thank you all. Later. Appreciate all right. it.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's our episode for today. We hope you've enjoyed yourself and learned a little something. If you haven't already, please feel free to subscribe to our podcast and drop us a 5-star rating. You can follow us at Barrett Banking on Twitter or Barrett School of Banking on Facebook and LinkedIn. And we even have a new Community Banking Road Trip playlist on Spotify highlighting your favorite songs about your home state. Check that out and feel free to submit your favorite song about your state to add to the playlist. We have an ever-growing slate of classes, seminars, and webinars that are available, and not to mention our industry-recognized Graduate School of Banking every May, and we look forward to seeing you at any or all of our events. For more information, check out our website at barrett.ws. And from Memphis, the heart of banking, blues, and barbecue, we'll see y'all next time on Main Street Banking.